Hey everyone, hey and welcome back to yet another episode of Alpha Metallica. This is your host Tom Quay. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for following us on Twitter at Metallica Pod, supporting us any way you can, subscribing, donating on the Patreon. Please leave us a review as well on iTunes. This is, you know, yet another episode in our exploration of the entire back catalogue of Metallica. We've been going for a very short time, at this stage. We're only on the third letter, but it's been great so far. Getting guests far and wide on, having big discussions, and it's always, always fun. And I'm joined today by Garrett. How's it going, man?
What's up, my man? Doing great.
All right. And, I mean, let's begin with the band. In your email, you said that you've been a fan for a while. Where did it start for you?
Oh, man. I was probably, 12, 13 years old when I first really got into them. This would have been, late 90s, early 2000s, something like that. It's just kind of an awkward period for the band. Yeah. So, first things I remember seeing were probably like I Disappear video. Mm-hmm. I watched on VH1, they had a little snippet of Cunning Stunts, the live concert.
Right.
It was like an hour-long special where they did, a few of their big songs. That was pretty much my introduction, watching that stuff, I was just blown away.
Completely. And then, moving throughout, you said you're a St. Anger fan in the email, so you're kind of into everything, right?
Well, yeah, St. Anger was the first record they put out after I became a fan, and that was a lot of fun to try to defend as far as their first release, I still think some of the stuff on there is pretty good, but... At that point, I was such a big fan, they could have put up, literally anything, and I would have liked it because I was, just first getting into them. I still love Unnamed Feeling. I still think All Within My Hands is really good.
Yep, I agree.
I think Frantic's pretty good. And, I appreciate the fact that they had to put that record out to kind of keep going as a band.
Yeah, it was a purging, if anything else, wasn't it? A kind of a statement that needed to be done. And the song we get to today... Crash Course in Brain Surgery, which is kind of maybe one of Metallica's better known covers. Not like their top tier covers, but no, this was originally on the $5.98 EP, The Garage Days Revisited, or re-revisited, I should say. Had you listened to this before, or did you discover this through the compilation later on?
Let me see. We used to have on the local terrestrial radio station here. They used to do, some deep cuts at 10 p.m. every night of Metallica. And I think that was probably the first time I would have heard it. This is kind of before MP3s and all that sort of thing. So, you had to borrow CDs from your friends.
One of my friends gave me,
I think, the second disc of Garage Inc., which had all of these covers and compilations on it. Very thrashy stuff for the most part. And, that was probably the first time I heard it. I really loved that second disc because, I was a teenager. I was really into the fast stuff. It had The Prince, Bread Fan. Just tons of thrashy.
So What? Yeah.
So What? Yeah. And, the production was like so raw in your face. The guitars were super distorted. It was pretty, wasn't quite the regular production they used. And I think they kind of used it to break Jason Newsted into the studio for the first time. It was pretty much their idea.
Yeah.
And I think the mix sounds great. It's not great production, obviously, from a engineering standpoint, but it matches the songs like so perfectly. And you can kind of hear a little bit of where they were going with the Injustice for All mix, with the guitars, super saturated way up front. The drums kind of, super clicky bass drum, very abrasive snare, I guess, kind of good way to put it. But they kind of started on that, whereas, on Master of Puppets, the release before this, lots of mid-range, tons of reverb. You can pretty easily hear the difference between the two.
And the bass in this song especially, I've never heard Jason here, so it's so loud.
It's kind of funny, pretty funny how the bass was... loud on Master Puppets, Loud here with Jason Newsted, and then Injustice for All, it's gone.
yeah, it's weird. They gave him a chance, and then, I don't know, they decided otherwise. And this is obviously a cover, as we say, a Budgie cover, who we've already encountered in our show. I did the Bread Fan episode a few months ago with Joker, and it got me investigating Budgie. You know, a lot of the bands on this compilation are kind of contemporaries of the band from the earlier 80s, you know, metal period. Budgie and this song, Crash Course, is from 1973. So, you know, it's a lot older than them. I mean, had you listened to much Budgie beforehand, Garrett?
Not a huge Budgie guy. No.
they're pretty obscure. But, like, I want to urge people to check them out. Like, a sort of Welsh... I mean, they're good enough for Metallica. They're very riffy.
Obviously, Metallica really liked these guys, so they did a couple covers. You know, this and Bread Fan. And, you know, pretty innovative stuff. I got their 71 album and 74. It looks like this song was on both of those. Yeah. Kind of did like a reissue. Mm-hmm. But the guitars are tuned down a half step, which is pretty unusual for the time. On the Budgie version, on the Metallica version, they're obviously tuned down a whole step. But, you know, and this is pretty innovative music for 1971. Just the style of it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. No, I agree. And it's there are some differences between the two. The Metallica version's longer than the Budgie version, and there's just little inversions that I do that I think are quite nice. Where on the Budgie version, the guitar riff starts it, and then the bass backs it up. Whereas in the Metallica version, it's the bass, you know, and the guitar is almost an accompaniment in the beginning, and it works really well.
Right. Yeah, I think the bass line on the beginning of the song and also in the middle, very cool. A lot of kind of almost like punk influence.
Yeah.
Not the rest of the song, but, you know, the bass line.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. And I mean, the Budgie version just begins, whereas the Metallica version has like a false intro. You can hear, like, you know, high up the fretboard a note or two escape. And then that riff comes in with the bass. And it is very classic. It's very punky. It's almost very sort of classic rock-esque, just to kind of kick the song into gear. But they Metallica-fy it, don't they? It has a much more of a chug. The drums are a lot louder in their version.
I mean, they're, you know, one of the best cover bands as far as taking a song and making it their own, you know. There's songs that, like Astronomy is also on Garage Inc., you know, that you listen to the original version compared to the Metallica version, and you're just like, wow, they, you know, completely put their own stamp on it. This is not really any different. You know, they turned kind of what is like a grooving classic rock style song into like a, you know, pretty thrashy punk rock tune. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, they definitely have their own take on it as well. And again, with the lead, so in the Budgie version, which I kind of just wanted to listen to, just got like Budgie now. I've sort of got into them slowly, but they have like the guitar and the bass like harmonize with each other and kind of like in sort of, and it's hard to sort of explain to sing it, but it's sort of pentatonic trade-off that's very common of this sort of music. Whereas here, the kind of, you sort of hear a crowd, don't you, before Kirk's solo. They have all the like the noise.
Oh, yeah, there's I'm pretty sure in the liner notes for Garage Inc. they talk about how, you know, in the Budgie version, they kind of do like a oh, baby, sort of thing. And, you know, in the liner notes, they say, you know, we obviously weren't going to have any of that. So, you know, we just put a bunch of like drunken yelling in the interlude there. But the solo is pretty stock Kirk stuff, you know, like it sounds cool, but, you know, it's pretty much as usual.
A lot of sort of harmonics and pinches towards the end, and you know, a bit more frantic from him. But yeah, I mean, what is your thoughts then? Like, regardless of Metallica, as Kirk as a soloist, are you a fan or?
Oh man, I mean, you know, it's kind of like what he did on the first five records. You know, it's kind of hard to dispute as far as, you know, how many people he influenced, how great the solos sound. You know, he kind of tails off, of course, towards their. You know, I like the stuff on the new records, Death Magnetic, Hardwired, you know, but it's not quite as good. He used to write, you know, a lot more creatively, a lot more harmonically, whereas now I think he kind of just uses the, you know, I've heard you talk about it on the show before, use the pentatonic scale, just tons and tons and tons.
Yeah. We just covered Confusion, I think it was the last episode, and this, obviously it's quite a new song that I wasn't too familiar with, but the solo on that is just like... It's, you know, again, like I'm a giant fan of this guy's early work. I don't mean it disrespectfully, but it's just if you know, this podcast is about critically thinking about these songs and appreciate them. And I just, I think the stuff here, I like I think it's just Kirk just having fun in that ripping. Nothing's expected too much of him, and you know he does well. And James as well, like his voice is a lot more kind of higher, isn't it, than normally.
I think he sounds great on this record, and I love it. It's like he has like a I don't know, it's kind of a little bit scratchier. Mm. You know, there's this, there's Last Caress, Green Hell, all those songs that are all on the same EP. And man, I actually put that in my notes. I was listening to it, you know, earlier today, and I was like, man, he is just killing it, man, on these songs here. And it's, you know, it's not quite his, you know, it's not obviously as good as vocally performing as on, you know, the Black album or something like that, but you know, just as far as like aggressive sounding metal vocals that still hit a note that aren't, you know, screams, this is pretty hard to beat.
And I kind of like the conflicting emotion in it. So I'm like, what you say is right. It does have that punk element, but it almost has that sort of rocky blues element with the riff. It's like, na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. You know, it's just very stock in the best possible way. Like something you can imagine almost like the Allman Brothers Band sort of putting one of those moves into their music.
Yeah, sort of that same kind of scale.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny is when I was first getting into the band, like I said, it was probably like late 90s. You know, what was huge was like, you know, a lot of punk music. There's Blink-182, Simple Plan, Sum 41, all these types of bands are coming out. And that stuff was, like, so popular. And I was, like, on the opposite side of the spectrum, you know. I was listening to, you know, all the early records, Kill 'Em All, Ride the Lightning. Not a lot of chicks clamoring to listen to, you know, the thing that should not be with me. And, you know, consequently, kind of the same thing here in 2017 as well, now that I think about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, so this kind of had, like, punk songs on Last Caress was obviously a punk song. This is kind of punky. So, you know, I kind of started to appreciate a little bit more styles of music. Not everything had to be, you know, thrash or super heavy. You know, and now I love punk music. So, you know, it's kind of cool how they, you know, took influences and got people into bands that they dug, like The Misfits and Danzig and all those guys.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree, and it's, like, great that, especially Budgie, they're, like, they're, you know, Metallica made them in terms of reputation. Like, obviously, they're a great band before them, but it's so great that, you know, James and Lars adore this band and put them front and centre. Like, I remember, I think Lars on, like, Chris Jericho's podcast or something, and they were just geeking out, and Lars mentioned some song from the early 80s by some new wave of heavy, like, I can't remember their name, you know, like, Satan Corpse or something, and, like, they found it on YouTube, and it had, like, 50 views, and it was, like, 30 years old, and they were playing it, and it's, like, you know, their fandom, I think, is really infectious. I can't really think of any other band, I'm sure people can comment below, that, you know, have done an album of covers and really sort of brought a whole generation into their music just because of who they were. Like, I remember Rush did a cover album recently that was quite good, but it wasn't, you know, it's not the same sort of level that you get that they worship these guys. And there is that huge range, isn't there? There's everything going from all the Motorhead covers to Budgie, you know, to just a whole, you know, wide range of stuff that they're playing with, you know, Danzig, etc., Diamond Head. Like, I love what they pull from. Are you aware of, because Lars did, like, a compilation CD of Thrash in, like, the early 90s. I don't know if you saw that.
I don't know if I've seen this, man. That's kind of news to me, which is surprising.
Yeah. I'll try and find some things on it now, because I basically want to do an episode on it. I was reading about it.
I did hear the Chris Jericho podcast where Lars was on there, and I can't remember. It was, like, Sweet Savage or something.
I think you're right, yeah. Something like that. The record is, it's called New Wave of British Heavy Metal 79 Revisited. It's a compilation album by Lars and music journalist Jeff Barton, released in 1990. It's two discs, and it's just got loads of bands I've never heard of. Weapon, Girl School, Vardis, you know, I'm sure it's great. And obviously, Iron Maiden and Tigers of Pantang and, you know, other more interesting bands there. Raven as well, who obviously they toured with, so... But yeah, I mean, it's good to see them dipping back. And unfortunately, this isn't a song that they've played live once. They played in London.
Yeah,
in 1987. So I guess just after this came out or around about that era.
Yeah, it's kind of surprising, you know, because they normally play all of their catalog or most of it. You know, they have a few that they haven't played live, obviously. But this is like a song that I would, you know, they played these covers aren't for encores like tons of times, and I was surprised that this hasn't snuck in there more often. You know, they've done Last Caress they did as a an encore song many times. Am I Evil they did tons. You know, all of these covers they played a lot, except for this one they only played once, which is very surprising.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe, you know, Lars was the only person that liked the song or something, and he like forced everyone else to record it. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe because they do Bread Fan. It's like, look, we do one Budgie song.
Oh, yeah, you know, of course. Bread Fan, they do so much. That's like a huge live song for them.
Yeah, that's one of their big ones. Yeah, So What as well. But yeah, but it's just nice to kind of look back and see kind of, you know, who they picked and stuff like that. And the lyrics, I mean, Budgie, from listening to them a fair bit after our Bread Fan episode, they're on the proggier side of things, musically, lyrically as well. So you just have quite evocative moments. Look inside and you will see the words are cutting deep inside my brain. Raven Black is on my track. He shows me how to neutralize the knife. It's just, it's not kind of...
Doesn't make it sound.
No, not really. But he doesn't really need to.
I actually was talking about that in my notes, that the Raven Black is on my track. I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but... You know, sounds cool rhythmically, so maybe that's what they were going for.
Yeah. And just thinking of the melody that James goes, it doesn't kind of. You're not sort of pondering. He talks of the wicked lance of fear and, you know, the crash course in brains. So I imagine, I've not really pondered too much of the meaning of the song, but it seems to be a guy sort of, you know, attacking his own brain, trying to change his kind of thoughts, which is quite a metal sort of setup.
Right. This is a. I don't know, I think it might actually kind of almost be like a social anxiety sort of thing, you know, so it says lack of words, you know, a lot of times seems like a song maybe about not knowing what to say. I don't know, that's really the only thing I could garner from it, other than, you know, all the lyrics sound bitching the way that they sing them, you know.
Yeah, James, he just always, he's one of those singers, just always seems to sound good on a track, like he always just gives it everything he has, you know, and it kind of... You know, the guy loves music so much, like, you know, for them to sort of go through and go through these tracks. But, I mean, any closing thoughts on this track, man?
Well, you know, I think the most surprising thing I thought was that, you know, that it had only been performed once was pretty surprising to me. You know, I love the bass line. I think Jason sounds great. I'm a huge Jason Newsted fan.
Oh, yeah.
I know Cliff is, like, the more innovative, the more revered bass player, but, you know, Jason was, you know... standout singer, had great stage presence, could sing harmonies, you know, he really made them a lot better band, you know, as far as like a solid unit. Obviously, you know, he wasn't quite the virtuoso on the bass, but you know, they used the CP to kind of break him into the band, and you know, their stuff with him is just, you know, it's unassailable, you know. It's just all great.
No, but I get what you're saying. I think there's many things with Jason, really, and definitely doing this podcast, I've, you know, I have so much more respect for him just watching all these concerts and what he gave to the crowd. He very much was a surrogate, you know, crowd member sort of on the stage, the way he rallied them, the way that, you know, the majority of Metallica fans probably came on board just before, you know, prior to your era, the Black Album era, the fact that he was the bass player then. So in many eyes, he is the bass player forever. And, you know, obviously Rob's been in the band longer than he has now, I feel, which is kind of mind blowing. Like, that doesn't seem right, but
pretty weird. But, you know, Rob is, you know, super professional. You know, great bass player. You know, he does justice to all of the songs. You know, he played the, Anesthesia. I've seen him, you know, do it note perfect so many times on YouTube and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, obviously he's a great member of the band, but still I just kind of can't get it out of my head that he's kind of like a hired gun almost. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's been in there the longest. You know, Jason, you can just tell, like, he was such a fan before he was in the band, and he's like, I've heard them say this on the Metal Up Your podcast with Cliff and Ethan, that, you know, he was almost like the hype man, Jason Newsted, for them. You know, they were on those Black Album tours that lasted like 7 years or whatever.
you're right. Utmost respect for Jason. Did you ever catch Rockstar Supernova? You aware of that?
Oh, this was like his side project.
Yeah,
the thing on VH1 where they tried to get a audition a singer, right?
Yeah. Me and my girlfriend rewatched the first episode recently, and it hasn't held up. I remember loving it as a kid. So for those not listening, it was a talent show And they did the first series where they were looking for the singer of INXS, and they got like a singer. And then this one was similar, where all the singers live in a house.
Tommy Lee involved.
Yeah. So it was. I mean, the lineup's not bad. Tommy Lee on drums, Jason Newsted on bass, Gilby Clark on guitar, who obviously was Guns N' Roses like sort of nothing man. Like shout out to Gilby, but like I think they kicked him out because he couldn't write songs or something like that. So it's kind of like he always just kind of looked a bit like Izzy, and they sort of threw him in there. And like I don't know, but yeah. Anyway, there's quite a good bit early on where they get everyone together, all the people are going to join the band, and they play them their first song, Jason Band's first song, Supernova, but without any lyrics or melody, and they have to just go up and write a verse. And like, there's this one dude who's like, I can't do it, man, you know, I'm not going to compromise my art. And I'm like, dude, you're on like fucking Rockstar Supernova, it's over. But it's just so weird to see Jason like judging and like just being, because it's like, it's fucking Jason Newsted, like he's better than all of this. I don't know why he's doing it.
He's probably used to being the one judged.
Yeah. I'm sure. I guess there was some reverse stuff there, but I mean, yeah, it was just seeing Jason and Gilby, and yeah, it was weird. But I mean, anyone that wants a bit more of a Jason fix, we've gone on a bit of a Jason tangent, but Jason, shout out Jason, I'm gonna say that one more time. But you mentioned seeing them live before. Was this in Dallas, was that the most recent time?
Right, well, I mean, the first time that I actually have seen them, which is, you know, kind of embarrassing to admit, was, you know, this summer on their stadium tour. Saw them, it was June 16th at AT&T Stadium, which is where the Dallas Cowboys play.
Right.
Not to get too local, it's actually, you know, technically a suburb of Dallas, kind of. But,
okay.
Yeah, it's a huge football stadium, American football, not
soccer, football. Right, yeah. Thanks for clarifying.
Yeah, man, you know, I want to be accommodating to the host here.
I'm just looking at a Google image, actually, of the AT&T Stadium. Fucking hell, it is a monster, isn't it? I can't believe how big it is.
Kind of looks like a spaceship.
Yeah, it really does. It really does. And was it sold out?
Well, you know, the concert was sold out. The stadium itself, you know, I think the attendance record is in there is like 105,000. But they had some, I would say, probably, you know, 2/3 of it open. Some of it was kind of curtained off for where the stage was. I think on Wikipedia, at least the attendance is 45,000, somewhere in there. Mm. But it certainly seemed like more people than that to me. I think maybe 60 to 70 was my estimate.
Wow. And Mixmaster Mike, I remember following this tour and everyone was sort of bitching about this guy. How was he?
Mixmaster Mike, I kind of stood out in the crowd and watched him do his thing. He scratched a lot of metal songs together. Right. Very long beer lines during Mixmaster Mike's set.
Oh yeah.
Just wrapping around, you know, everyone was going to get a refill and he was doing his thing, which, you know, he's just up there to have a good time and kind of, you know, people into the, you know, get them hyped up. You know, Avenged Sevenfold played before him, so, you know, there was probably like 45 minutes in between those sets, so he was up there just kind of playing, you know, he scratched some, like, he did Slayer, you know, Pantera, which, you know, they're local guys, Pantera here. So
right.
You just have to, you know, just kind of do a Pantera mention and, you know, the crowd will go wild.
Yeah. And where were you? Were you close? Because, I mean, it's such a giant place. Like, what sort of view?
I was pretty close. Yeah, I actually did the what I believe is referred to as the Unforgiven experience on their tour website.
I'm actually going on that. That's the experience I have. So please, was it worth it?
Totally, man. I mean, at this point, you know, they're getting kind of older, and you know, so am I. So I'm not trying to pass any judgment on them. But you know, I didn't know how many more times they were going to tour. So I would probably have paid anything at this point to go. But no, it was totally worth it. You know, I got a you know, you got a poster, I think a hat, something like that. Nice. And that was, I was down right on the floor. You know, I'd probably say like, you know, 20, 30 yards back from stage. So, you know, I had a great view. The mix was great. You know, it took them a couple songs to dial it in on Hardwired, which was the song they opened with.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much could only hear the bass drum. That's really about it.
Right. Oh, shit.
But, you know, after that, you know, they did the same set list for every tour stop, minus a few, like, rotating slots. And the rotating slots we got were Memory Remains, Motor Breath, and Blackened. So, you know, I was pretty happy with that. So
yeah. Who wouldn't be happy
everything
with Blackened?
Great. I loved Hardwired. So they played, you know, a lot off of that, and you know, all the staples, very classic set list. You know, all the big crowd participation songs were in there. The only thing I didn't really like was, you know, they did they played "I Disappear" basically with just the bass and lead guitar, which I, you know, kind of thought was a little silly.
Yeah. Was that like the Doodles?
Yeah, it was supposed to be like a little solo bit.
Right.
You know, they did a bass solo afterwards. And, you know, I kind of could have just done without the "I Disappear" part. But, you know, it was great. I had no complaints, man. It was awesome.
Well, that was the song that got you into them, wasn't it, to a certain extent? So,
yeah, that was definitely their first single to come out, like, when I was a fan. And, you know, they had the music video with it. And, you know, everybody looked, you know, so cool.
Jason, you know, on those steps. Yeah.
When you're a teenager, you know, you're trying to figure out a lot about yourself, how you want to look, how you want to dress. You know, I was just barely starting to play the guitar, and you see James come out there, and he has, you know, like this bitchin' pointy guitar all the way down to his knees. And you're like, wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, he's effortlessly one of the coolest guys ever, James. Like, you know, I just love his look, love his demeanor. But yeah, look at the Dallas set list, actually. Yeah, it was really good. And going into Sad But True, into One, into Master Rubs, into Fade to Black, it's like they've just got so many hits, haven't they? It's ridiculous.
That was definitely the craziest stretch of the concert, you know, because they did a lot of Hardwired songs to start. And, you know, the fan base there, I don't want to, you know, tell tales out of class, but, you know, kind of seemed like not a lot of people knew all of those Hardwired songs they were playing. But then they came out, they did Sad But True, and that was definitely the most crowd participation of the entire evening. And then, you know, right into One, Master of Puppets, and Fade to Black. I mean, it was nuts. That little stretch right there was just crazy.
Yeah. Well, very lucky to have seen them. I'm looking forward to, it's 3 weeks today, actually, at the time of us recording this, till I see them. So yeah, very, very excited for that. But, Garrett, this has been great, man, going through this song. Is there any things you'd like to plug, or any music or anything?
Yeah, I actually do quite a bit of music. That's sort of the only thing I do besides work, really. Right. But, no, I have a Twitter account. It's G as in go, M as in money, and B as in boy, 0051. That's GMB 0051. I have a lot of music stuff on there. I have a SoundCloud. Our group is called Tragic Forms. Mm-hmm. It's not so much of a group. It's just sort of me and my friend. And I do all the guitars, and he does all the drums, and then we kind of collaborate on the vocals, and, you know, we record a lot of, you know, obviously it's Metallica influence, not necessarily sounding like them, but, you know, just kind of write whatever and record. It's sort of our catharsis.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'll pop the link in the description for the Twitter and everything like that. But this has been great, man. I want to just urge people before we go, you know, follow the show, subscribe to us at Metallica Pod, Patreon, get in touch with me as well, MetallicaPod@gmail.com. If you want to come on the show, like Garrett today, just let me know a song you want to do, and we'll get it in. But no, thank you again, bro. I really appreciate it.
Man, it's been an absolute blast. I'm so glad that we got in touch, and hopefully somebody will say, hey, that guy was pretty funny, bring him on again.
Yeah. I'm sure that will happen, man. I'm sure that there's more songs we can dig into. But finally, Garrett, again, cheers, bro.
Cheers, my man. Hey, last thing, I just want to clarify. I know you were saying that when the covers were part of your pod list here, you wanted to get members of the band to talk about them. I'm not in Budgie.
Okay? Right. Yeah. I will. I'm hopefully getting Raven on, who I know they didn't cover, but they toured with. So yeah, Budgie would. I mean, I had the guy from Blitzkrieg on. So yeah, maybe Budgie. I can reach out to my fellow Welsh brethren in my continent. But until then, this has been great. And finally, thank you again, bro.
Take care, my man.